everybody, and welcome to today's edition of Sunday Impact. We are going to be reviewing the sermon from March 23rd. I've got Pastor James with me today. How are you?
I'm good. You?
I'm good. I said that Great. Like I have anyone else.
Well, like you, know, you never know who never might know. Show up sometime.
I know. So last week we had announced that our text, the 217 text, was not working anymore. So hopefully we didn't miss any questions. But the new number to text questions to is 404-565-4498. And the email is still working, always has worked, if you email to questions@taylorvillechristian.com. And this week we did have a question on the Connect card, so I was pretty excited Good. About that.
Yeah.
Yeah, and then you had an in-person question, so we've got both those covered today, so looking forward to talking about those. And we are in the study of the story of God's love. And it's a year-long That's right. study. And this portion of the study you're calling invitation.
That's right. Because Abram is invited into the story. But really that leads to us being invited into the story. And that's why it matters so much. So it's all tied together.
Yeah. And Genesis 16 is all about plans.
Right. And plans that were the plans of Abram and Sarai rather than God's plans, from what I read in the story.
Yeah. So even though they messed up and give kind of a bad example to us of taking things into our own hands, we can still know and stand on the promise of Psalm 36:5 that says, "Your love, O Lord, reaches to the heavens, your faithfulness to the skies." And this story shows God's faithfulness, not only to Abram and Sarah, but to Hagar and Ishmael as well.
Correct. Right.
Yeah. So you, in your introduction to the sermon, I really loved the analogy of wait in the car. Just wait in the car. You talked about the hero or the police officer that's always saying, "Just wait here, I'll go take care of it." And then inevitably, the person that's supposed to be staying in the car gets out of the car and causes even more problems for the hero.
Right.
So it is hard to stay in the car, especially when we see all the action going on around us, or when we're waiting on a promise from God. It's hard to know
it is.
When we're supposed to step forward in faith and when we're supposed to just wait in the car.
Right. And we'll come back to that before we finish up today.
Right. Well, my husband said that when you're talking to rednecks and central Illinoisans and farmers, you should really use a truck.
Like, wait in the truck. That's fair. That's fair.
Yeah. So wait in the truck. But Genesis 16, 1 and 2 says, "Now Sarai, Abram's wife, had borne him no children, but she had an Egyptian slave named Hagar. So she said to Abram, 'The Lord has kept me from having children. Go and sleep with my slave. Perhaps I can build a family through her.' And Abram agreed to what Sarah said." How does Sarai's proposal to Abram reflect her desperation to see God's promise fulfilled? Because she was desperate for this.
Yeah, you know, I can imagine, and of course this really is reading into the text, but I can imagine sort of the emotion and the thoughts behind what she says there, that this has been going on for years. And up to this point, and we'll come to it in the message for this coming Sunday, Abram has received the promise, but she has not. Mm-hmm. So I wonder if maybe she's dealing with that. Maybe I'm the obstacle here. Maybe I'm the reason this promise hasn't been fulfilled. Mm-hmm. Anytime a couple deals with infertility, which is what we have here, either one or both of the partners are eventually going to think maybe this is my quote unquote fault, as though
right
anybody's mm-hmm. really at fault, you know, but right. maybe it's my body. And you know, I wonder if that's part of what's going on in her mind. Well, we sort of know it is, because she says yeah. the Lord has kept me from having children. So it's yeah. something within her. And of course she blames God, but I just feel so much emotion behind all that. Abram has received these promises. It's not happened. Maybe she needs to get out of the way of this. Maybe, you know, I mean, I can imagine her thinking maybe he needs a different wife. Maybe God is waiting on me to die so that he'll have another wife who can be the one who fulfills these promises. I don't know what she was thinking. I just imagine all that could have gone through her head. So I think there's a tremendous amount of emotion, even emotion, when she says, Yahweh has kept me from having children. That's a big statement.
Yeah, it is. Yeah.
And then to be willing to go to the next step even more, you know?
Right. I think that is a part, I mean, that grief, the anger, I mean, you can almost hear a little anger in it.
You can.
And, you know, I see that in the struggle with infertility. But in the culture in those days, you know, when a woman was barren, that was what they were supposed to do, be fruitful and multiply. That is what yeah. they were told from the very beginning.
I mean,
and what purpose
does she serve? The purpose for many women, really. I mean, yeah, there you go. Yeah. Purpose
in
is the word.
In their culture. I'm not saying in our culture. I'm exactly. saying in that culture, that is what that was their main thing, was to populate yes. the earth,
to produce an heir,
and she couldn't do it. So that was their culture. But I look at our culture and we don't have the pressure, but we still see women struggle with infertility wearing the same desperation and yeah. anger and hurt. And, you know, even if you can do IVF or adoption, it's not a guarantee.
Right.
And often we take negative approaches to pain relief, like you said, sometimes alcohol, drugs, gambling, etc. Those things provide not only a sense of distraction, but a false sense of control. Like, I can't control this other thing, but I can control this.
That's right.
And is there always something negative that we do or use for a distraction, a false sense of control?
No, I mean, there could be positive things that we would use in the same way, right? Like, let's just say physical activity, exercise. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's a good thing to right. exercise your body. I mean, it makes us more healthy, but can we bury ourselves in that to the point that it becomes a distraction from all the pain? And maybe mm-hmm. that's even a positive way to handle it, unless it becomes, I mean, that can become addictive behavior too, right? Anything yeah. that's right. sort of taking over can make that happen. So, you know, when I think about Sarai, and as you said, in that day and time, a woman's purpose was to produce an heir in a marriage. And it had to be compounded by the fact that Abram has become a rich man, mm-hmm. that God's promises have come to him. All those things have put more pressure on her mm-hmm. to fulfill this cultural purpose. Now, you know, that's not to say, as you sort of noted, that God is saying that a woman's only purpose even then was to right. produce an heir, but that was a real sense for women in that culture, that if they failed at that, then they were basically a failure in everything.
Well,
so all that is bearing down on her.
Right. Well, in some of their cultures, there were even in the marriage contracts stipulations if the wife couldn't produce an heir.
Right.
She was supposed to take her maidservant.
Yeah. It was not an uncommon practice.
Right. So her faith struggle, and as you said, you know, the desperation and kind of, well, maybe I'm the problem. Maybe she should, you know, it would have been a common thing for her to say that. I wouldn't.
Yeah.
I'm not condoning it. I'm not saying it's right.
I get that.
She was getting out of the driver's seat and taking control because she felt like she needed to do something.
Well, and I think we got to be careful to not condemn her too quickly, right? I mean,
she has
tremendous pressures on
her. She does, yeah, yeah.
And stresses and time is passing and all those things.
Mm-hmm.
I think we have to, I guess I'm thinking about Abram too. You know, we can't excuse him from this whole thing because she's the one who suggests it, right?
Right.
He knows God can make his promise.
Yeah.
And God has been pretty clear with him from the outset. And to think that, again, he needed to take this into his own hands and sort of solve this problem for God strikes me as he's missing the point of what God's promises are all about. So, you know, it's one of those times when we need to be careful not to blame either one, you know, exclusively, because I think there's some questions there on both as far as where their faith was.
Right. Well, let's take it back from Sarai's faith struggle with infertility amidst the promise of offspring. Let's bring it to today and to us.
Right.
Besides infertility, what are some issues in which we nowadays struggle with waiting? If you're job hunting,
right,
if you're house hunting, waiting for a spouse, is there any aspect of our lives that's not affected by the need to wait at one point or another?
Oh, there's so many. You know, we could probably, if we racked our brains, think of something that doesn't involve waiting, but almost anything important does. Like you said, whether we're going to get the job, the other side, whether we're going to lose the job. You know, when somebody's a company they work for is struggling, it's like, well, somebody's going to have to go. Is it going to be me?
Mm-hmm.
In church, sometimes we have to wait on building a building or starting a program or hiring staff or, you know, whatever it may be.
Mm-hmm.
So that there's all kinds of waiting, and the things that matter most, I think, make the waiting more difficult. I mean, on the other hand, almost everyone is going to wait, even like for death, right? I mean, there are people who are waiting for death to come, not because they necessarily have some morbidity or whatever. It's just the sense that I'm ready. A lot of things that I lived my life for are gone, and I'm ready to be in the presence of God. And so even death may require waiting. And waiting that can be difficult because it's a hard time in life. So there are so many things that require waiting. We're always waiting on other people, it seems to me. But if it matters, the waiting is going to be more difficult.
Yes, I agree. So Sarai reacted with control rather than faith with something she really had no control over.
Right.
And you had mentioned earlier the physical, emotional, and spiritual effects.
Right.
Which is the more difficult for you in the waiting? Is it the physical, emotional, or spiritual?
Oh, probably emotional for me. I mean, a lot of people think that I'm pretty even keel, and that may be on the outside, but not all the time. But that doesn't mean the inside is always calm and cool, because it's certainly not. So, and I struggle with when things are uncertain, when I don't know what, you know, sometimes you're waiting, you know the outcome, but you're just waiting on it. Sometimes you're waiting and it's uncertain. And that's hard for me. Uncertainty is very hard for me. So that puts me in emotional turmoil. So I guess emotional is the answer for me. What about you?
I think that it has all connected with me.
Yeah.
with my anxiety. I just, and it's just because of all the things building up to this. Like, I'm a control freak, and there have been so many things in my life. And no matter how much I try to reform, and God tries to teach me this lesson, and I just continue to make the same stupid mistakes that, you know, I cannot stay in the truck. I cannot stay in the car, and I need to stay in the car. And so I always think, well, what am I supposed to be doing and what am I not doing? And how can I help, you know, how can I help God in this situation? Like, he doesn't need my help. He needs my obedience. He doesn't need my help. And so that's probably a really big thing for me to set back. And I think we said this in an earlier podcast, to set still in obedience is probably the one of the very hardest things for me to do and allow God to do his work. So this is this whole thing is like stepping on my toes, but it's in a good way. So, but, and I, you know, I probably sound like I'm really hard on Sarai here, but I think it's just because she let, because of the infertility issue and what she did. I think if it was anything else, like trying to control it in a different manner, I probably would be more sympathetic. So I can't cast stones. Like you said, I gotta not be so harsh on her, but yeah, go ahead.
No, no, go ahead. You're right on. I mean, it's just, we're all different. We're all made different on things like that. And not only is our makeup different, but our experiences affect how we respond to waiting.
Right.
So, you know, just depends on where we've been and what we've had to wait on even.
Yeah. So Genesis 16:4 says, Abram went to Hagar, she conceived, and when she saw that she had conceived, she looked with contempt on her mistress. Yeah. So why does Hagar begin to despise Sarai?
I think it has to do with the inherent inequality involved in one person owning another person. It never works. It's never good. And that's what we have here is, you know, I can think back to some stories of, I'm reading this book right now about people who escaped from Jim Crow and moved north in the middle of the 20th century. And as you read that book, you know, there are times when, I mean, this is not slavery, but it's the after effects of slavery, right? So you have people who move away from the South, African-Americans who move away from the South to get away from that Jim Crow mentality. And some of the white people are like shocked because they've always been nice people to work with. And they submitted where they had to submit. And they always just lived within the parameters that the culture demanded. And then they up and left. And these white people are like, just why would they? Everything seemed so good. Well, because what choice did they have, right?
Right. Yeah.
And I think that's where Hagar, what choice does she have but to do the menial tasks in the household? Because she's either owned or her social class is so low that she's forced into this situation. And then suddenly she's not. And my guess is Sarai is like, well, you know, I've always treated you well and I've always provided for you. And now you're upset. So I think that has got to be part of this, right? So it does not work for one human being to own another.
Right.
Now, part of this is jealousy.
Oh, yeah.
In my mind. This scripture makes it seem so easy, right? He went to Hagar and she conceived. Done. And it had been decades for Sarai waiting. And it was so quick and so easy that this happened. And so I think she has a sense that that Sarai despises her, and maybe she does, but the inherent inequality in the relationship only amplifies all of that and creates this incredible tension between these two women that is a result of the fact that one situation has changed dramatically. And so she probably does have negative feelings towards Sarai, but her position's elevated, so she doesn't have to be subservient in the same way.
Right.
So lots of things going on
right.
there.
Right. Yeah. Well, I mean, I can't say that if I was Hagar, I wouldn't despise Sarai just for asking me to do that.
Yeah.
Does that make sense?
Right. I mean, that's a big piece of this. Yeah. Sure. Right.
Yeah.
And, you know,
like she didn't
Sarai
have
goes
a choice.
To Abram. Right. He's yeah. the one who makes the decision. Nobody yeah. consults Hagar to see if she wants this.
Yeah.
So
yeah, it's just crazy. And then, you know, for Sarai, the shame, the guilt, the self-hatred
yeah.
with her just that quick getting pregnant. Is this why she blames Abram? I mean, like, she just does a 180, and it's your fault now, Abram, that my maidservant is treating me badly. I mean,
I think there is definitely, because the way this is worded at the end there, may Yahweh judge between you and me. And it is an expectation that God is going to find Abram guilty and her innocent in this.
Yeah.
So, you know, and scripture doesn't tell us a lot.
Right.
I wish we had a little more, but it is clear to me that she perceives that either Abram is not siding with her, or maybe even worse, he is siding with Hagar. He's sort of allowing this, or maybe even encouraging yeah. this. Now, put myself in her shoes. Abram wouldn't have to do much to make me feel that way.
Right.
Right. We don't know what Abram has or has not done, but it's clear to me that she perceives that he has wronged her in some way. And he may have. But it would be so easy for whatever he's done or not done to be amplified or interpreted as opposition to her in favor of this person who is her slave of all people and now has been intimate with her husband. So, and right. has going to bear her husband's child, is just a huge setup for tension between Hagar
oh, yes.
and Sarai, and tension between Abram and Sarai, and probably between Abram and Hagar too, because there's, you know, so many problems around them. So
right.
this is why it's just, you know, this is not a good solution to this problem,
right.
even though they thought it might be.
Well, and even though it was culturally acceptable.
Right. Just because it's acceptable doesn't mean it's good, right?
And it doesn't mean that it was God's way of doing
exactly.
things. Culturally
exactly.
acceptable does not always mean God's way.
Correct.
And, you know, put yourself in Abram's shoes. He's sitting on this promise that he can't see fulfilled. And then, you know, well, whatever. Okay, Sarah, I'll go do this. And then all of a sudden, he's going to be a dad. Is this his child of promise? Is this, you know, going through his head? I don't know, because is it not until after that, or was it before that, that God told him that Sarai would
it
bear
is later.
Him a son?
We'll talk about that this coming Sunday. In
okay.
fact, it's 13 years later, at least.
Okay.
So there's a long time
yeah.
before we get there.
Well, and Abram's just sitting on this promise, not knowing how God's going to do it, just knowing God's
right.
going to do it. And,
right.
you know, he hasn't shown a whole lot of wisdom.
Yeah.
Except for, I mean, he's obedient, but he's not always wise after he's obedient.
Yeah.
Does that make
yeah.
sense? 'Cause he's
it
like,
does.
Oh yeah, Sarah, you're not my wife. You're my sister. Let's go, you know, and that gets him in trouble.
It does.
And it all works out. And then here he's in this situation where he's forced to make a decision. And does he make the wise decision? I mean, we're not in his shoes. So again, we can't judge, but I don't know. Do you think Abram was passive? Should he have intervened or stopped this whole thing in the first place?
Well, I think
that's a loaded question, right?
Right. Well, the better answer would have been when she said, here's my idea. What do you think? For him to say, let's stay in the car, right?
Right.
So let's
yeah.
wait on this.
yeah. Yeah.
But now he's caught.
So how did there
He's in a no win. You know, I mean, what is he going to do between his wife of multiple decades and now the mother of his child? What does he do in this situation? And, you know, if he is at all conflict averse, like me, he just wants to walk away from that situation.
So how do their reactions reflect human nature?
Oh, it's so, all this is so almost predictable, right? I mean, to think that they're, oh, I'm sure this will be fine. There'll be no problems between Hagar and Sarai. Really? You know, I mean, it's so real. And it's another one of those places, and I think I mentioned it in one of the services Sunday, that, you know, if somebody was making this stuff up, they would make all these heroes perfect. And they're just not. And it's one of the things that points to the reality of these things, that this really did happen, because they're not painted as just icons of perfection in their faith, that they are flawed and like us. I mean, this reads like real human stories.
Oh, this
and
reads
someone
like
someone was writing a story. This makes sense.
It should be a Netflix docuseries. This should be.
Right.
Or a limited series. Yeah.
Right.
So then we go on in the story, Genesis 16:7-12. That's the interaction between the angel of the Lord and Hagar. And I think it says the angel of the Lord found her and spoke to her. Says, Hagar, slave of Sarai, where have you come from and where are you going? We see so many stories throughout the Bible where people actually heard God's voice, but we don't hear stories about that now. Why do you think that is? And this is one of our write-in
questions. Yeah, that's a good question.
It is,
I wish I knew, and I mean, it would be great if God did speak audibly to some of us at times. I think I just happened to read, you know, in the reading plan actually for the year-long series, we're in Exodus, I think it was 33 today, and we have Moses meeting with God at the tent of meeting, and I think it says something like, they spoke to one another as friends. That's a pretty unique relationship in scripture between God and any human being, to talk about it that way. But wow, that would be, I think that would be nice. I mean, I've never experienced it, so I don't know. But I think part of the reason that we don't have that is the writing of the Bible itself, right? I mean, this takes place before any of it's written down. So Abram can't say, okay, well, you know, to figure this out, let's turn over to Deuteronomy chapter 12, and I think we'll find the answer in the law that's written there.
Right.
None of that is there. We see the same thing in the New Testament. Why was the Holy Spirit so clearly active in the book of Acts, and sometimes we don't feel like we have that today? Well, we have the New Testament. They didn't have the New Testament. So is it because we have God's word that we can study to find out some of these things? I think that may be a big chunk of it. But we're also talking about the nature of God, so I'm apprehensive about saying, well, this is why God does this, that, or the other. But that's my best guess.
Well, and we have the Holy Spirit now.
Indeed. Indeed.
That we have the indwelling of the Holy Spirit, that he speaks inside of us. He lives inside of us.
Right.
And they didn't have that then.
That's right.
So God did come down in the form with messengers and stuff like that. And I think that you were talking about Exodus 33. We just had that in our Bible study Monday night.
Okay.
And there was a tent outside the camp.
Yeah,
that they called the tent of meeting.
Right.
And I thought that there was a place in there that said anyone could go. But not everyone went.
Oh, let's see.
And even Joshua went, and he lingered after Moses left the tent of meeting.
That's exactly what it says. I read that too today. When Moses would return to the camp, but his young aide Joshua, son of Nun, did not leave the tent. That's Exodus 33:11.
Yeah,
and the same verse I was sort of halfway quoting. Yahweh would speak to Moses face to face as one speaks to a friend.
Right. And verse 7, it says, anyone who wanted to consult the Lord would go to the tent of meeting that was outside the camp. And whenever Moses went, all the people would stand up, each one at the door of his tent, and they would watch Moses until he entered the tent. And then they would bow and worship. They didn't get close to the tent of meeting. They wanted to keep their distance.
Yeah,
even though they could have went, they didn't go. So I don't know. And then for God to actually come down and speak to Hagar, who wasn't necessarily seeking him, and she wasn't of Abram's.
Yeah, she's Egyptian.
Descent. We have to remember that. But she's also part of Abram's household. So therefore, she does come under the protection of Yahweh. Is that correct?
At least under the protection of Abraham, or Abram, who is under the protection of Yahweh.
Of Yahweh.
She is, you know, she should be protected by him. Yeah.
Yeah. And, I find it so, so interesting. And that kind of goes along with my next question. How does the angel of the Lord's encounter with Hagar reveal God's care for the marginalized in our world?
Well, it does, doesn't it? Because she is at the bottom. Even though now she's pregnant with Abraham's son, I don't know that she knows it's a son at this point, but with his child, she's still a slave. She's still a menial servant. And that's the way Sarai has treated her. She's the outcast. She's the foreigner among, I mean, both Hagar and Abram and Sarai and the rest of their clan are, they're all foreigners in this land of Canaan, but Hagar seems to be by herself. I mean, all these other people came from the north. She came from the west, southwest, and she's alone. She's the lowest and she's alone. And then that's who God goes to when she isn't her deepest need. One of the times, I mean, she'll have another time where she has a need as well. So there's so much in her life, and it is a difficult, difficult life.
Right. What's the significance of the angel's instructions to Hagar to return and submit to Sarai?
Well, it couldn't have been easy to hear.
Oh, no.
Because, I mean, it's been a difficult, she ran away for a reason.
Right.
Because this relationship is terribly broken. So, but this means survival. You can't survive alone in the ancient world out in the, you know, desert. It's just not going to happen. So if she's going to survive, if her child is going to survive, it's going to have to be back with the only people that she knows, which is Abram and Sarai. So it's survival. I think that's what that's all about.
Yeah. What does the prophecy regarding Ishmael tell us about the future of his descendants? I think you talked a little bit about the wild donkey of a man.
Yeah, I mean, his life is messed up for sure. I mean, he's going to be in conflict with people for his whole life. But, I'm hesitant to talk about his descendants because so many people go so many directions with that.
Right,
I don't want to get too far down there because this really does speak to him more than it does his descendants. But, you know, he's not the son of promise, and it's not going to be easy for him. His future is going to be rather difficult. And as we read the story, we find that to be really true. Now, one of the things I didn't bring out in the message that I read in one of the commentaries, I'd have to look back to see which one, is that this is sort of a foreshadowing of the story of the people of Israel. But interestingly, it's in reverse, right? Who's the slave here? The Egyptian woman.
Right. Yeah.
Who's in charge? Well, the man of God, Abram. Who is mistreated? The Egyptian woman. Who runs away like an Exodus to the desert? The Egyptian woman. and who was seemingly wanted to be dragged back, just like the people of Israel were. So it all gets reversed later on, but we're almost being given a glimpse into what that story is going to be in Exodus. But strangely enough, in sort of a weirdly reversed manner, where it's the woman and it's the Egyptian who is enslaved and sort of is being brought up. So it's a funny sort of thinking through that story and looking forward to what's coming, you know, next book over.
That is very interesting way to look at that. I love it.
It is.
Yeah. So, Abram is the hero of faith as revealed in Hebrews. However, but here he's not acting in faith.
Right.
But Hagar, in obedience, returns to Abram's household. So she is acting in obedience here because she goes back. What is the significance of the name Hagar gives to God?
And I had never thought about till I studied this a few weeks ago with a small group, sort of in preparation of this, until I read that, you know, she's the only person who names God, which is just
it's amazing.
Terribly interesting.
I mean, it is.
It's just striking to me.
Yeah.
And again, this is sort of a piece of the puzzle that's a reversal on that story of the people of Israel, because who does God reveal his name to? Well, it's them. I am who I am. You know, it begins with Moses, and Moses carries that name to the people. Well, just the opposite form, God does not reveal his name to Hagar. She does not know him as Yahweh.
Right.
But she sees this God and this angel of the Lord that comes to her. And so she cannot leave this God unnamed.
Right.
She has to give him a name, and he's the God who sees me. And isn't that powerful? Because she's sort of an unseen person in the world. We wouldn't even know about her if Sarai had not said, "Hey, take my slave woman and sleep with her and produce an heir." No one would have cared about her. She's the last person to be seen, but God saw her.
Right.
And then that comes to be part of who God is. That comes to be part of God's name. And it's really interesting to me. And, you know, I mean, she let's see, she names this place
Beer Lahai Roy.
Yeah. And beer means, a spring. And what struck me was I was preparing for a Bible study again in preparation for this, that when this is much later in Abraham's life, he's next to death at this point, he sends for a wife for Isaac. And the servant goes back to Abram's home in Syria, the opposite direction from Egypt, and returns with Rebekah, who's from their same clan. And when they get back, this is Genesis 24, verse 62. Now, Isaac had come from Beer Lahai Roy, for he was living in the Negev, which just means the south. And he went out in the field to meditate. We don't really even know what that word means. Some of the translations say meditate. Some say walk. It's the only time that word's used, so it's a little bit hard to figure out what it means. And as he looked up, he saw the camels approaching. Rebekah looked up and saw Isaac, and she got down from her camel. But isn't it interesting that when Isaac is, you know, waiting on his bride to come back, the place that he is the well of the God who sees me. And it's sort of Hagar's well, which is not where we would expect to find him. And yet, of all the places in Canaan, that's where he is. Interesting.
It is interesting. I find it interesting too. You had quoted a New Testament passage in Galatians that it talks about Hagar's son being born under the law or according to the flesh. And then Paul doesn't mention Sarai. He calls her the free woman.
Mm.
And her son was born according to divine promise.
Yeah.
But Hagar is named.
That is interesting, isn't it? And why?
Yeah. You know? I don't know. Sarai's not named, but Hagar is. And I think I think maybe that is, I don't know, just God's grace on letting her be remembered for being so misused, and he wasn't going to allow her to be forgotten, and she was going to have
her. So yes, he clearly remembers her, yes. Right?
So I just think that is just really cool. Just, right. I don't know why. She wasn't forgotten. God sees those whom we seemingly don't see.
Right.
Yeah. Is the birth of Ishmael a turning point in Abram's family story?
Well, for the family, for sure, right? Because we have tension between Hagar and Sarai, between Abram and Sarai, and certainly their sons will have tension mm-hmm. all the way through as well. Right. So, I mean, it's you know, in some ways you could think of it a little bit like the turning point in David's life is the sin with Bathsheba. It's not exactly the same, and it's not as destructive or catastrophic as that is, but yet there's consequences for this. Let's put it that way.
The consequences are catastrophic.
Right.
For the nation of Israel. Yeah.
Right.
So in your sermon, you reminded us that following the birth of Ishmael, Sarai and Abram waited 15 more years for Isaac.
Yeah. Yeah.
Did they finally learn to stay in the car? To just wait?
It seems so.
Yeah.
Because there's almost no stories in that intervening time. There's not a lot. There's a little bit, mm-hmm. but not a lot. We don't hear a lot about Ishmael's growing up. But with that said, I mean, just a little sort of window into what we see next. If we look at chapter 17, mm-hmm. where God appears to Abram to sort of and changes his name to Abraham there,
mm-hmm.
and reaffirms the promise.
Right.
And God is giving him these promises, and he says, that's when he says Sarai is going to have a son. This promise is from Sarah. Changes her name there too. So mm-hmm. Genesis 17, Abram shocked at all this. Verse 18, and Abraham said to God, if only Ishmael might live under your blessing. And it is as if Abraham is saying in that moment, yeah, it would be really nice if Sarah had a son. But we've already got this other boy. He's already here. Do we need to build up our hope again? Do we really need to go through all this? I mean, we're already 99 and 89, 90. Do we have to keep hoping for this? How about just use Ishmael? Mm-hmm. So I think mostly the answer to your question is yes, they are. But there's still a little bit of, well, can't we just solve this with what's already happened? Which I can't blame them for, but
to have the audible voice of God with the issue of infertility, just the struggle, the emotional struggle that it is. And imagine how many years, and then to be told again, you know, oh my gosh, it would just be so difficult, I think, to be in their shoes and to say, okay, God, whatever you say.
Yeah, we'll trust again. Yeah. It's been 24 years since you first made this promise, and we were old then.
Yeah.
And so, okay, we'll try to trust again.
Right. So, you know, in their humanity, we see that Sarai's actions got her and everyone else in a messy situation. and Abram's willingness to go along with her idea.
Right, right. It's both.
Your bottom line was a failure in faith leads to a failure in action. So we have to know what we're supposed to do.
Yeah.
Know what we're supposed to do, wait in faith, or by faith, take action. Either way, we need to choose faith.
Right.
When should we use our own initiative? And how do we know? Because it looks like Sarai is just using her own initiative according to what she knows in her culture to be right. What should be done. How do we know?
And this was a question that somebody asked me after church Sunday.
Yeah.
And it's a good question. And it's something that I really wrestled with in the message. And I wasn't really sure what to do with that wrestling because I was trying to make a specific point, but this is closely related to it. So
yes,
the question is, all right, sometimes we do have to just wait. Sometimes we do. But God also gave us a brain and God gave us abilities. He gave us strengths. He gave us knowledge. He gave us the reasoning power. So when do we just use that and do something? And when do we wait? Well, there's one of the real difficult questions in life. And I think that's one of those things that just goes back to praying and listening and allowing God to lead us in the right direction. And sometimes, I mean, our study of scripture will reveal, well, there are certain things that are right and certain things that are wrong, and we want to choose what's right.
Right.
It's nice when it's easy. Necessarily easy, when it's clear.
When it's clear, yeah.
Sometimes that's still the hard choice, even though it's clear.
Right.
But then there are those times when, I mean, it's not something laid out specifically in the Bible. This is what you should do in this specific situation. And we have to pray for the leading of God's Spirit and then allow God's Spirit to lead us. And there are no, you know, easy solutions to know when to do that and how to do that. Sometimes that is part of the hardest thing of being a person of faith is waiting on God and knowing when he's leading us to do something. So I don't have any shortcuts. I don't have any easy answers. It's the hard work of being a person of faith and following God to the very best of our ability. And we might get it wrong sometimes. And right. God still loves us.
Yeah. I had a pastor growing up that was my uncle. And I remember him preaching on when we move forward and when we don't in faith. And he said, when in doubt, don't.
Yeah, that's not bad. You know.
So like, I kind of took it to the extreme. Like when my kids would ask me if they could do something and I was unsure about the situation or where they were going or who they were going to be with. And if they wanted an answer right then, I would say, well, then the answer's no. You have to let me think about it and investigate. And then I will decide. But if you want an answer right now and without giving me time, the answer's going to be no. I mean, those are just my, if I haven't had time to kind of consider and pray about it, if I don't have a peace about it, then the answer's going to be no.
Yeah, I get that.
I don't know. It's just, I think that's however you come to your discernment and peace. However, you know what, like you said, your whatever inside is leading you to and peace with God. So how can we cultivate a trusting relationship with God like Hagar did in her moment of despair?
I think for her, and this is not going to speak to every situation in life, but when we have a situation like she was in, first of all, she's desperate.
Yeah.
God is her best hope. That's all she can really, she's walked away from security and safety, and she is completely dependent on God. So recognizing that God is our best hope, and that's always true, but it may not work itself out in the same way that it did with Hagar, because life has, you know, so many different kinds of complex situations that we have. But if we can see that You know, there's a lot of things we could depend on in life, including ourselves. But if we depend on God, we're going to be in a better place. So recognizing that's where we put our faith, that's where we put our hope, that's where we focus our action. To me, that's, you know, finding the same kind of trust she did in a desperate situation.
Yeah. All right, one more question. How does the narrative of Hagar's ordeal and the birth of Ishmael help us understand God's sovereign plan, even in the middle of human failings and complexities?
So if we take ourselves, it's hard to do this because we know the story. We know how it works out. If we take ourselves and put ourselves in the shoes of the various people, let's say after Hagar goes back and she's pregnant and Sarai is not, and Abram is wondering how these promises are going to be fulfilled. We're sort of there, right? We don't know the future. We don't know how things are going to work with our own children or our parents or our spouses or our jobs or our finances or our country or our church or anything else. We don't know the future, and they didn't either. Mm-hmm. And the only way to get through that was to sort of depend on God to work his plan. Sometimes God's plan is not easy. That's not what this is about, but it's about God's purposes being fulfilled. And they were in that big narrative. And it did get complicated, and it got really more complicated later on, but God's still at work. And to trust that God is still at work, I think is really a big part of this. And, you know, God sees it all. And he saw Hagar in her most desperate moment. And he will see Isaac go through some really difficult times himself. And, you know, when he goes back to find a wife, and then his descendants would go through the family of Jacob and his interaction with Esau. And, oh, there's just so much as we go through the rest of Genesis, and we're not going to cover it all because we don't have time. So just be sure you're reading through that reading plan. But we see the complexity of God's plan sort of open out from Abram, but then focus back in on Jesus. But that's going to be, 2,000 years.
Yeah. And we get to do it all in a year. We get to go through it all in a year. I'm so excited. This just keeps getting better and better, I think. I'm just really enjoying this study.
You know, it's hard to go wrong with great stories like this about real human beings.
Yes. Yeah. I hope everyone listening is enjoying this study as well. I look forward to next week. You're going to do Genesis 17. I'm really excited to see how God works through both Ishmael and upcoming Isaac. I'm really excited to see where that goes, even though I kind of know, but I'm excited. I'm excited to study it more in depth. I know that is. Okay. So everybody who has questions, again, text those to 404-565-4498 or email them to questions@taylorchristian.com. Or fill them out on your Connect card like we've had this week, or just ask us in person. So until next week, James, I'll see you later, and goodbye, everybody else. Yep.